The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 25th of May, 2021. On the podcast today, Mark Epstein, CEO of Mobile Streams, talks about the launch of their next generation version of its Streams content platform. Also on the podcast, Glenn Goodman, former ITV News business correspondent and now the author of The Crypto Trader, covers this week's Bitcoin movements, bad predictions from media commentators and fake crypto gurus. Plus, Jamie Constable at N Plus One Singer talks to Paul Hill about the UK economy, the pound-dollar exchange rate, the mini-boom in M&A, what types of assets and stocks to own, and are we heading into golden era for healthcare? Plus, at the end of the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most read RNSs too. You can see both these lists at voxmarkets.co.uk. We'll see lots of other content there, including an article there on 88 Energy. There's one there on, a new smiley-faced interview from Paul Hill with fund manager Gervais Williams, and talks about lots of stocks there. Always worth listening to that. Very sharp guy, Gervais. Union Jack all awaits next milestone events at West Newton. And also, as always, our COVID-19 index. Always worth a look there. Biggest rise today is Open Orphan, up 4.65%, 36 pence. Biggest faller, down 6.3% to 123. It's Synergen. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
Hello and welcome to Vox Markets. Today I'm joined by Mark Epstein, who's CEO of Mobile Streams. How are you today, Mark?
Doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine. Good opportunity to learn more about Mobile Streams today in the wake of your latest news. But what is the significance of the news that you've just released this week?
So basically, yesterday we introduced an enormous upgrade to our platform. A lot of hard work has gone in by our team for this. And the upgrade is simply a game changer, massive product uptake. We're utilizing the latest AI and machine learning technology to transform companies' marketing ability. We now have the ability to transform it instantly. You know, using our platform, they can do things in a fraction of the time it would normally have taken. It's almost like having your own automated marketing department now for just £150 a month. Thousands of man hours have gone into this. We've analyzed interactions from across all of our touch points. Thousands and thousands of interactions have been analyzed. Every line of code has been updated. It's been a massive effort across everybody, real sort of data-driven process. We've had feedback from multiple customers in multiple territories. All the new price points that we're going to introduce this year, people will see update after update coming. And yesterday was just the beginning, but it was a huge step forward for the business and enables us to access types of markets and individuals and customers that thus far we haven't been able to access. And we'll now build on the success we've had and take it to even greater levels.
Right. I mean, one of the obvious issues in the small cap area is that private investors, they're big on holes in the ground, but not so big on technology. So maybe it's worth you just running through, the technology of Mobile Streams.
Yeah, so Mobile Streams is a content insight and business intelligence business. We took over the company, the new management took it over about a year and a half ago. We rescued it from a delisting. We saved the company for the shareholders. Prior to us joining, it was a content delivery business operating in various parts of the world. And basically what we did is we built up a content insight and business intelligence platform that's been hugely successful. We launched that last year, and this year it's been going from strength to strength. This product update was our next generation launch. It's taken everything that we've learned last year, everything that we've built up, all of our customer feedback, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pieces of information, thousands of interactions with the products, taking all that on board and then launching a new iteration that enables us to take this really to the next level. to launch internationally, to take this in a real sort of global sense. We've got plans to launch this in multiple territories. We've already launched in China. We're live in the UK. And now with this platform and our partnerships, which I'll talk about later, we're in a great place to make this, well, hopefully will become an industry standard platform in years to come.
I mean, clearly in the tech space, it's difficult to talk about tech without talking about unicorns. And that's obviously everybody's goal in this space. How do you think you're going to get the footprint going? How are you going to get that penetration of your market that you're obviously looking for?
Yeah, it's a great question. So we're aiming at the SME market, particularly. And there's been a lot of growth in this sector. It's a huge market, millions upon millions of businesses in the UK alone. Massive market in America, South America, Europe, Asia, India, China. It's a huge market that's growing. And what we're looking at are companies that don't have huge marketing departments. They don't have 20 people on the floor. They've got one, maybe three or four people. And they really struggle. They struggle to find content to put out on different channels that's relevant. They struggle to get the right things in their newsletters and their blogs. And they spend all their time trying to chase what's working and then try and, you know, regurgitate it and recreate it for their own needs. This takes a long time. We know this in previous businesses. We've tried to do it ourselves. We've created a platform that transforms that. It instantly and immediately can enable you to find the content that's working and extremely quickly push it out into your channels. You know, it's no small feat, and it's taken a long time to get there. We use machine learning and the latest AI technology to look across all of the touch points in an area that someone's searching for. Look at everything, what's working, what's not, to find the right content for that business. It instantly displays that for the user and enables them to publish that across their channels. There's many other features to the product in the enterprise version that look at competitive analysis and things like that. But in the SaaS platform version, we've got something that has the ability to transform a company's marketing for a simple £150 a month. And we feel with the technology and price point that we've got, we're in a great position to sweep into that market and grow scale over the coming months and years.
I mean, given that it is, you know, how transformational it is, if I was an SME, wouldn't I? I mean, I would be trying to find this, Googling this on the internet. Is it something that people will also find themselves, or, you know, not requiring the marketing?
Yeah, so we have both marketing campaigns we're conducting, and we have our own SEO work going on. And we have a really, really great plan that we're implementing in terms of our marketing strategy and our marketing structure to onboard customers in a structured and managed way. At the moment, we've had huge interest in the product. We've had an incredible number of sign-ups. I was speaking to somebody the other day in the marketing team, and they were almost overwhelmed by the response we've got. Yesterday, I think it's not going too far to say, was probably the best day we've ever had in the business. It's been a really interesting journey to see the product ramp up, if you like, over the months that we've been building it. And now we're in a great place where we're looking at scale, we're looking at customer, we're looking at interest from multiple territories. And really the decisions for us are, you know, how many do we onboard, which territory do we go to next, and which direction do we take this in? In terms of demand, there's plenty of demand for this, and we just want to grow in a structured and process-driven way that leads us to where we want to get to. Because we're not looking to build this business for the next few months. We're looking to build this to become a huge business over years. And we've looked at other companies that have done successfully, like Brandwatch, that are worth hundreds of millions. And the thing is to do it and to develop the product and to roll out the development roadmap in a way that gets you to where you want to be and not sort of trying to shortcut it too quickly.
And just finally, have you got any news for us about your partnership with Quanta?
Yeah, the Quanta partnership is going extremely well. We've talked about this before, but I can't overstate how well that's going. The Mexican opportunity that we were looking at has developed even further, and that's an enormous potential market for us. And we're looking to deliver in the near future some absolutely amazing top-level football and boxing content into that market via the Quanta partnership. which should totally reinvigorate the old legacy business for Moss in that territory. There's a huge amount of work going on, but I think in a short space of time, people are going to see an absolute transformation. And with some of the content that we're talking to them about, it's absolutely top level. Boxing, football, key sports in that market. And we, you know, we're in a position to potentially take a lead there once we introduce that. So I think people should watch that space. There's a lot to come there. Some incredible work coming on, and we're really happy with the relationship we have with the Quantity team.
Mark Epstein, CEO of Mobile Streams, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Glenn Goodman, the Dirty Trader, real life of winning dirty trades and dirty strategies. That's his book right there. He's dirty and
it's
down with it.
Trader. Can you just tell people it's the crypto trader, not the dirty trader? That's
and
the name of the
inside there, Glenn, he's got a picture of him in his dirty pants trading.
There isn't.
Okay, it's a crypto trader. But that should be your next book, I think, you know.
Yeah, the dirty trader. I mean, it actually is quite a good name, isn't it?
Yeah, the dirty trader. Because this
Do I have to pay you commission, though, if I call it that?
No, you're all right.
All right, thanks.
Because that's what you are, the traders. You've got no loyalty to anything. Just numbers. You're just top slice, you know, 10% here, 20% there. You don't care about a business.
What? That's not true.
You don't care about the business underneath it, though. People
that's
are employed by the business.
True. If you read my book, I mean, you've had my book with your drink sitting on it for a year, but have you actually read it? Because if you had, you would know that I say quite early on about how excited I was from an intellectual and aesthetic perspective by the advent of Bitcoin. And then when Ethereum came along, it quite literally blew my mind. Quite literally, like literally my brains were all over the floor. I'm really into this stuff. I find it very, very exciting about the future of the world. So yeah, but also I like to make money as well.
What this book is about, what you won't find for free on the internet, the right. Proving money-making strategies of a master crypto trader.
I didn't write that. That's the blurb on the back written by a third party.
Well, in brackets, that's me. So how is that? How is that?
Did I really say that's me?
Yeah. So what makes me a master trader? Wow. You big yourself up in the first place. Do I have a master's in trading? Do I have my own apprentice? What is it I have far more valuable? A track record of highly profitable crypto trading and nearly two decades of investing experience. First, as a sideline.
God, it sounds quite boastful, doesn't it?
And then.
Did I really write that? What kind of mood was I in? I must have been in some kind of some kind of weird manic phase.
Yeah, you were on something, yeah.
Okay, that's slightly embarrassing, but I suppose you've got to big yourself up in the introduction for your own book.
Apparently so.
Okay. Oh, no, I'm going red.
So, Glenn, it's had a big sell-off, Bitcoin. It's all Bitcoin because that's the main dog, and everything sort of follows that in a more leveraged way, I suppose. You think there are coins that rise faster and fall faster than it. But I've noticed, what's your thoughts? Because I'll tell you what my thoughts are on crypto, Bitcoin, as far as a turn. I went through, I don't know why I did this, I was obsessed with it. Now, the Bitcoin has fallen below the 200-day moving average, all right? That's the big, and that's the most powerful, sort of well-looked-at moving average. It's regarded as the bull bear line. If you're above it, people are quite bullish. If you're below it, quite bearish. Now, it happened on 19th of May. It went down below it, and then it popped up above it next day and down below it again. And I thought, let's look at the last few times it's done that, actually gone below it. So I went through from 2015, when it's ever done it, and it turns out, basically, it doesn't just go down and then pop back up, or sometimes it does, but not for long. It tends to stay down there for a while. And 2015, for example, it crossed on the 18th of August at $251. Okay, it stayed down for 54 days, pretty much, and then it crossed back up on the 11th of October at 246. Now, 2018-19, this is where a lot of fake sort of bounces happens, because it crossed down on the 5th of February at 7,925. Notice the price difference from 2015, by the way. It's gone like from $251 to 7,925. Then it crossed up 3 days later, and then it crossed down again 5 days later, then it crossed up a day later. Then, on the 12th of March, It went down and it stayed down there for 386 days. It crossed there. And the, when it crossed back up, so it crossed down at 9,004 and it crossed back up at 4,600. So it basically halved. So it crossed down, bounced, crossed back up a few years later, then went lower 386 days and almost halved in price. And then the last time it did it was basically... Dash for Cash, 2019-20. It went down, but it was basically 30 days and 81 days. So it doesn't just, you know, people just think, oh, we're on a bounce. It's going back up. It's going back to 60,000. It doesn't happen like that, you know?
No, when the trend starts,
When the trend starts to go downwards, yes, it'll bounce, and it's quite volatile, Bitcoin, so it'll have some really aggressive bull market rallies, or bear market rallies, I mean, but then it'll grind lower again. So I think at the moment, if you're thinking of starting to trade in Bitcoin or you want to invest in it longer term, I'd wait. I'd be patient, you know?
Yep. I would do the same if I were in that position. The 200-day moving average, I mean, you know, to some extent, it's an arbitrary figure, 200 days. Why should it be more important than 150 or 250? But because so many people pay attention to it, that gives it a certain amount of self-fulfilling prophecy kind of validity. On top of that, you're quite right to say, basically, when you're in a ranging market, you know, when the market's moving sideways, which most markets tend to do for considerable periods of time, Bitcoin no different. Bitcoin tends to move sideways for, you know, sometimes a year or two at a time, you'll get the 200-day moving average, the price moving up and down below and above the 200-day moving average with a certain amount of regularity during a ranging period like that. And that's when those are the kind of times where if you're a long-term trader, you want to pretty much ignore the moving average and just go, okay, we're in a ranging market. This isn't the kind of market for me. And actually, the fact that the price is going up and down constantly above and below the 200-day is an indication to you that you're not in a good market. So those are the times to kind of sit on your hands as a long-term trader. But then once you get a signal, say from technical analysis, that tells you that the price is properly breaking out, like the one that I flagged up last September, when we went above 10,500 and then 11,000, and then it was clear to me that a bull market was starting. Once you get into that kind of environment where you're in a bull market, you would, as you quite rightly say, expect to stay above the 200-day moving average for the entire thing. And that's what happened in this bull market, in the previous bull market in 2016, 2017, and in the one before that, for the most part, apart from one very, very brief intraday dip below the 200-day in 2014. Other than that, that previous bull market had also sort of followed that rule. It's a good sort of rule of thumb. If you're above the 200-day moving average, you know, you're probably in fairly safe territory, at least most of the time. But as you quite rightly say, we've not only gone down below the 200-day now, but we've actually stayed below it for about a week, which is a pretty bad sign, because longer-term traders often look at the a weekly chart. They'll often, you know, only look at weekly candles on their chart. And what they'll have seen is that this past week has printed a weekly candle that finishes below the 200-day moving average. So for very long-term traders, that is a very bearish sign for them.
Yeah. And like I say, at the moment, the bears are fighting the bulls, so that's why it's quite volatile, isn't it? People are convinced it's going back to, you know, the most loyal of Bitcoin hodlers, convinced it's going back to 65,000. Whereas if you just...
Yeah, there are a lot of people saying that, aren't there? I've noticed that on the internet. So a lot of, this is just a dip. This is just a dip. I mean, it could just be a dip. You'll have noticed...
All I'm looking at here is basically, I'm not predicting where it's going to go. I'm looking at what's happened previously and saying, when it's done this, and that's when people get... Why gets my nerves with technical analysis? When people draw lines and saying, this is going back to 100,000 or...
Off a line.
How can you do that? You can't do that. All you can look at is the way it's acted previously... Looking at longer-term trends, saying what happened last few times this happened, and then you say, okay, so the probability of that happening again is quite high, or there's more of a chance that it will go lower than it will go higher. That's all you can look at, really, you know?
Yes, you're 100%, I 100% agree with you. People take technical analysis you know, too definitively. Ball. Yeah, exactly. They see, like, for example, you may or may not have seen, I posted a chart, was it yesterday? Yeah, yesterday, with a potential head and shoulders forming in on the Bitcoin chart. And it's the same pattern that you'll see for a lot of other cryptocurrencies as well, because as ever in a dip, whenever you get a strong fall in Bitcoin, everything else follows. So everything else has fallen just like Bitcoin has. And so you've got this head and shoulders pattern forming. And what that would mean, if it was fulfilled, would be that the price would then fall below 30,000 and probably fall a fair distance further, which is what tends to happen when you get a serious breakdown from a head and shoulders. But what I did just to annoy people, well, not just to annoy people, I did it because it's true, in the little picture I drew, was that when you get to the end of the pattern, either the price falls significantly in a breakdown or it fails, which means the price goes up. So obviously that then begs the question, well, Glenn, you're just telling us the price could go down or it could go up. Mm. How helpful is that? It's helpful in the sense that it shows you what the two main possibilities are and where they are likely to occur. And it also tells you, with a head and shoulders, that if you get above the second shoulder, which hasn't formed yet, in other words, if you get around about 43,000, if the price rises above that after forming a second shoulder, then that's a pretty bullish sign. That tells you, on the balance of probabilities, that you're quite likely to have a full recovery from this dip. Whereas if the price falls below that line that I've drawn at 30,000, then you're pretty likely to have a prolonged bear market. Mm. So, you know, even though, as you say, technical analysis doesn't tell you anything definitively, it just points you in the right direction on the balance of probabilities. And of course, that's how traders make their money, is on the balance of probabilities. If I do 10 trades, perhaps only, say, 6 of them will be successful trades. But the hope is that because I've used technical analysis, those 6 will really take off, or at least a few of them will, and I'll make big money on those few. And then the 4 out of the 10 that completely fail, I'll have exited very quickly, realizing that the patterns on the charts aren't doing what I expected them to.
Yeah. No, it's all about, you know what, it's funny that I saw this big discussion recently about people reckon investing was gambling, and someone said it's not gambling. I said, well, listen, it doesn't matter what you call it, there's odds involved with everything, there's risk involved with gambling with investing. I in fact wrote this in my Shapex Investment Club earlier. I said, people call investing gambling, and by definition, it probably is. But there's a world of difference in the bets you choose to take. I said, for example, if you choose to bet on a wildcat drill, never been drilled before, the chances are 10-1 of you getting a return on your money. That is, the chances of a positive return, they're very slim. For every time you bet one time, you get return. That's a 90% chance of failure. That is not good bet. I wouldn't take that, whatever happens. And yet people do that, you know. I see people pumping these stocks that are doing wildcat drills, you know, high-impact drills, not knowing, basically, there's a 90% chance of failure there. Why do that? And I saw recently people sort of really ramping up Amigo Holdings, which is this one of these loans companies that loan to people basically needy. It's not an area I'd ethically invest in anyway. But I saw people betting on, saying it's really worth it. And they had a court case. And it obviously is highly regulated, this field anyway. And basically, the chance of any court case at best is 50-50. Now, I wouldn't even invest on that. Why would you do that? It's literally, it's easy to win, or it's a binary bet, essentially. Don't do that. If you play the investing game properly, you should not be looking at companies that won't give you off your 80% chance of success. And that means you check everything via research, via their cash, has the share price risen massively recently, you know, where they're based, you know, all that kind of stuff. Are they generating cash? Are they close to generating cash? If you take all these steps into consideration, then the bet is very high, the chance that you win and do very well and get a good return. But yeah, people are attracted by massively high risk. And I thought, why? If the reward is there, don't do it.
You're not going to survive in the long term as a trader. Believe me, because I've seen so many fall by the wayside over the years, as I'm sure you have as well. People who take too much risk, they might even have their day in the sun. These days, that means being on Instagram, setting up their own trading group, saying, hey, I give out signals, join my trading group, join my private my private chat room or whatever, and they'll have pictures of them on Instagram with a Lamborghini that they've hired for the day or whatever. And, you know, these people might last a year or two, maybe even do really well for a year or two. But their high risk-taking nature and the fact that they don't understand about risk management and position sizing, because they've never bothered to read about it, means that they almost certainly come a cropper eventually. The maths are against them in the longer term, because you only need to be unlucky once to lose everything. Well, you can be lucky 50 times in a row and make money and make money and make money. But as Nassim Taleb, the philosopher slash risk manager, would tell you, you only need to be unlucky once in order for everything to fall apart. And that actually goes for the entire world, not just trading. If you think about it, for example, with humans having invented nuclear weapons, we can be lucky every single year, but we only need to be unlucky one year. We only need one unlucky incident to occur where somebody gives a false warning, somebody tells a guy to launch the nuclear weapons, and it's all a big mistake.
Whoa, calm down, Glenn. The point is, like, human nature getting wiped out. I've gone from just people. All I've gone is from people not knowing risk. I said, listen, and if you follow anyone who's recommending Amigo Holdings the last few days, unfollow them, because that's just dropped by 50% in one day because the court ruling went against them. And I thought, why would you even go for that kind of play? It's not worth it. People say there's a massive upside, massive downside as well. There are microcap companies that are massive upside over the long term, and they don't have massive downside. If you do your research, you know, so it's just...
And manage the risk.
You really ramped that up then into the extermination of the entire human race, Glenn.
I'm saying from
not making an investment on a risky loans company to you wiping out the entire race. It's going to happen. It could happen.
Same principle. That's the point. Yeah. And actually, just to give technical analysis another big up, me and you have been talking for weeks about the Bitcoin chart forming a kind of rounding top, haven't we? And then I put out a warning about, about two weeks ago, I put out a warning on Twitter saying, you know, look at this rounding top. It looks like it's forming a head and shoulders. If that breaks down through around about $48,000, it was at the time, if it breaks down through around $48,000, then that could be the end of the bull market. And then I did another warning on May the 17th, what I called a major warning in block capitals, major warning. If we fall below this line here, then the world will fall apart, which is what happened. Yeah. So lots of my followers have been very kind and thanking me profusely for giving them those warnings ahead of time. But the beauty of technical analysis is you don't have to be Nostradamus to give those kind of warnings. All you have to do is heed the chart, like you and I have been doing for many weeks now, talking about how it's not acting right effectively. That's what it comes down to, isn't it? Whether you call the pattern a head and shoulders or a rounded top or whatever. The fact is, me and you, Justin, have been saying for weeks and weeks, hey, look, Bitcoin was going up in a nice regular kind of fashion for months and months and months. It would have little downturns, but they were always kind of regular and orderly, and there would be a quick recovery. But this was different because it was a long rounded top that was forming over a period of a couple of months. Well, 3 months even, which is not what you would expect in a bull market. And it didn't bode well. And we flagged that up, and I hope people listen to us.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, the thing is, it's true. It's like I said, that relative strength index was showing the rallies again, not as strong, not as fierce. They were weakening all the time. And that's down to is basically is showing, okay, the price is going higher, but the volume isn't. On those rallies, it's going down. So each rally is getting weaker. And then all of a sudden, when it didn't make a new high, that price action there was a confirming of that, saying basically it couldn't make a new high there. So that is that was the big. Where is that? On there?
Exactly. That's when we talk about for people who don't know the TA. When I keep referring to a head and shoulders, that's exactly what I'm talking about. You have a shoulder and then a head. In other words, you go from lower to higher, and the head is the peak. And then the second shoulder is what you're talking about, where it tried again to make a new high, but didn't quite make it. So it turns into a second shoulder lower than the head. And that to you, that to a trader is a good sign that there just isn't the buying power that there used to be in there anymore. So it's not astrology, this technical analysis. The head and shoulders thing, it has validity because it shows that the price is trying to reach higher highs each time in a sort of staircase fashion. And on the final attempt, it has failed and has made a lower high. And that's a major bearish signal.
One guy I see that are very bullish all the time are that Fundstrat guy. And Pomp
as
him.
Well. Just but that Lee, the Fundstrat guy, I'm going to name him on here because I'm annoyed. I've always been annoyed with him, actually, because for years and years going back, you know, in 2018, he was making these wild forecasts about what the price of Bitcoin would be by the end of that year, which were completely wrong because 2018 was a terrible bear year, of course, and the price fell very, very heavily. And yet, you know, these people like him and Pomp go on and they make their big forecasts and they get hundreds of thousands of followers all going, yay, you know, what a great forecast, you know. And I get people writing to me saying, I don't understand these top emails and stuff, these people saying we've, you know, these, I've been hearing forecasts of $100,000, $1 million, you know, these. And they believe these people because people like Pomp and Tom Lee have got credibility. They've got,
and you
they know,
they hold a big chunk as well.
And they wear suits or whatever, and they own a big chunk. Yeah. So they're pumping their own book effectively. Well, I don't know if Tom Lee is, actually, to be fair. So I don't want to defame him there. Yeah. I don't know what his company's Bitcoin holdings are currently, but certainly Pomp, Anthony Pompliano, has been a big Bitcoin holder for a very, very long time, and is just relentlessly positive about Bitcoin all the time. Coincidence? I think not.
To be fair to Tom Lee, right, he did get the Dash for Cash thing right, and when it rallied down, everything was going lower, and they thought it was going to be a retest, and there wasn't a retest, which was very unusual. And even I said to him, but hang on a sec, this has gone down so fast, gone up so fast, there's probably some kind of retest. It did roll over a little bit, but didn't retest the lows, which maybe that's one of those. And I suppose what you have to do though is when you are, making predictions, you have to make them bold, because if you make them sensible and like completely plausible, then so no one's gonna say, wow, you're a genius, it has gone up by 1%. You know, that's not gonna happen. If you say it's gonna go up by 100% in the next 60 days, and it does, this guy's a genius. And it always, and that's how you gain followers.
I found because he was annoying me, I did a Google of old Tom Lee there, and I found an analyst note from some newspaper from 2008. They'd asked a bunch of analysts from different banks and financial institutions, what are your predictions for the 2008 financial market, you know, the year of the enormous crash? Tom Lee gave a very positive forecast for the rest of that year. And again, you know, anybody who doesn't know any better, who doesn't know much about investing or has just got into it, they'll look at this guy, they'll listen to him talk. He sounds like a very plausible guy. He must know what he's talking about. It's 2008. He's predicting a good rise before the end of the year, despite the fact, of course, that we already knew about the subprime mortgage crisis at the time. But hey ho. He's saying everything's going to go up by the end of the year. Of course people are going to listen to that, and they will follow what he says. And it just drives me mad. And then the thing is, if somebody's so wrong so often, why on earth do they keep getting invited back on CNBC or places like that to make more predictions that people are supposed to take seriously?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what you need to do then. You need to make ridiculous predictions. just say Bitcoin is going to 10,000... in the next 5 days. No, in the next 10 days. That makes it better, easier, more catchy. Bitcoin is going to 10,000 in the next 10 days.
How to destroy my reputation in 5 minutes. My hard-won reputation.
What reputation
I'll have you
got?
Know.
What is it? Just inquiring. What is your reputation?
It's niche. It's a niche reputation.
But that doesn't mean it's positive. why say, you know, what do you feel what's your perception of your reputation there?
It's small but respectful.
By the way, that is a lady who replied to you. I suspect she's a bot, right? But she said something really nice to you, and she's stunning, and you feel like, is that someone's copied picture there? And you look at it, she's got no followers. She's following 29 people, but no followers. And you think, that's something.
No, I know what you're thinking. I've just scrolled down to the person you're talking about.
Kat, her name is.
Yes.
Very attractive lady with no followers.
I know what you're thinking, but that's because...
I get that a lot.
But it's actually not a bot. Well, I can tell it's not a bot because she asks intelligent questions for a start. She asks complicated questions about trading, which I suspect a bot would not be doing. But anyway, more to the point, you get a lot of people like that because people like me and people like you say, hey, we're on Twitter. We say some interesting things on there. And what happens then is people who've read my book or listen to your podcast, who are usually not on Twitter, then sign up specifically just to listen to us, which is why they follow hardly any people and have no followers at all, because they've never tweeted, most of them, at all. But they do, do private. I'm not private. I mean, replying to other people's tweets. So if you look at their tweets and replies, you'll see that they're fairly active, but they don't actually broadcast tweets themselves. So that's how I can always tell they're not bots.
You should follow her. She's a big fan of yours and she likes you and she's giving me, big up.
I hardly ever follow people. I don't know. Should I be just, as a matter of course, if someone follows me, should I be following them back? Is that the thing to do?
Yeah, because she looks like a bot. If you know she's not a bot, then
she doesn't look like a bot. She looks like an attractive lady.
No, I know. What I'm saying is, I've had people follow me, right? And they literally got no followers. Followed them. I thought, because she's amazingly attractive. Turns out it's a model. They just nicked the face off the internet,
Yes, and that is often the case. But you can tell the difference is what I'm saying, because the ones where they've just nicked a face off the internet, they tend to have done a tweet that says, buy Scumcoin now, with a picture of a few rockets going to the moon. Mm. And they go, click on this link here or whatever. You can tell it's a bot. Whereas you can tell Kat is a human being because she's asking me about the conversion of Tether into Bitcoin and complicated things like that. Mm. She's asking for complicated amounts of it. You know what I mean. She's not a bot, okay?
No, she did ask.
You're not a bot. I know you're not a bot. I don't think of you as a bot.
No, even that diagram.
Unless you identify as a bot.
No, even that diagram, she did ask him, what do you mean? Does that mean... go down or up? I don't understand what you mean there. She said that. Fantastic book. Thank you for writing it. So are you saying if we dip to 30 mark from the current bounce, it can go either way? So how do we get confirmation of the bottom? No, that's fine. It's,
yeah, exactly. Sensible question.
Yeah, okay.
are you happy now that she's...
And then she replied to you in a sensible way. Because every time I do a YouTube video now, what I get is like about straight away, lots of replies. Yeah. And people are basically saying, that's a very good. And they start off almost like replying to your video, but it's a bit generic,
Oh, I know what you mean.
They say, that's very good analysis on stocks, but you're going to find it very hard to work against the crypto crowd and the amount of money pouring in there. And one of the guys or trading systems I follow with high degree of success is Trevor Dawes.
Colin Blunstone.
Yeah.
From
yeah, follow him here and join his club and all that. No. And it starts.
They're everywhere now, not just on YouTube. They're all over Facebook as well, and not necessarily. If you look at just say any article by like the Evening Standard or the Economist, and the comments below. On Facebook, you get people talking about the subject matter of the article, but 9 times out of 10, they're then replied to by somebody saying exactly what you mean. They'll go, yes, I completely agree with your viewpoint, but I've made a lot of money on cryptocurrency with Mr. Trevor Adams.
But you get them replying to each other, agreeing with each other then. I've joined his system as well. I've made this amount of money last week. And they go, what are you talking about? This is one big scam, you fools.
I know, but the thing is, to people who haven't seen that 1,000 times like we have, I remember the first couple of times I saw that happen, I fell for it. Well, I mean, I didn't actually invest my money, but I fell for it as in I believed it because, like you say, they have loads of them all agreeing with each other and giving each other likes and having conversations. It's like as if there are 20 people having a conversation, though I guess, of course, it's all just pre-programmed as a kind of... you know, so it's not like you actually have to have a human being in a developing country sitting there and typing all these replies. They'll have programmed it all using algorithms so that they just repeat this thing everywhere, all over the internet. But it is really plausible. And people have been taken in. People have handed over large amounts of money through that kind of scam because it is so convincing, because there appear to be so many people involved who've all benefited from it.
Okay, all right. Yes, hang on.
What? You're looking at one of these.
Yeah, no. That's just an image scan on that... No, that's odd. That lady cat, just an image scan to see if she is, because sometimes you can do that. I've done it before.
You are obsessed with this lady cat.
Yeah, no, I want to see if she's a bot or not, because that's, have you tried doing that?
Bot or not.
A bot that, or not.
That would be a good game.
Yeah, it's a good website. Bot or not. But no, you can do that. And normally, when I've done it, like a guy actually in a suit and looking very slick and a good picture, very professionally taken picture, following me and giving an opinion. I thought, who is this guy? And literally, had very hardly any followers. So just, you know, screenshot his image. You can upload it to Google. And basically, it was this, he nicked someone's picture of an American small cap listed company. And, you know, one of the directors. And one of the directors of a small cap.
You know what? The main competitor to my book, the other book that's selling really well, I'll just dig it out now, is a cryptocurrency book that is exactly that. It's a made-up cryptocurrency book. I've reported it to Amazon, you know, written emails to them. They're not interested. They said, oh, we'll look into this. But that was weeks ago, and they've done nothing about it. It's clearly a scam book, and yet it's selling huge numbers. It's written by a guy called Mr. Andrew P. Hammond, right? So I took the photo of him that they put on there because it looked generic. You know, it's got one of those blurred backgrounds. So I did a reverse image search on Google, and sure enough, it's a stock photo that was taken a long time ago, you know, used for any number of things. There are tons, literally 177 fake reviews for his book, all giving him 5 stars. And they're all written, I assume, by some enormous kind of warehouse in a developing country where they have tons of people all sitting there pumping out what look like sensible reviews. You know, each review is different in order to kind of fool Amazon's algorithms that search for fake reviews. They've actually got human beings writing these fake reviews in a plausible fashion. But it's very clear that these are fake human beings, not fake human beings, but these are fake reviews. Because if you click on the name of the person who wrote the review, you will find they have reviewed the same handful of books as all the other people who have done reviews. They've all reviewed the same books. And they're not just cryptocurrency books. They review this cryptocurrency book, and they all review something about wok cooking. Cooking with woks.
Why didn't you get onto that then, Glenn?
I mean,
get some fake reviews for your book.
Oh, I'll get caught out, won't I?
It seems to be working. No, I get that all the time. I get people on LinkedIn approach me saying, I can make your podcast number one in the charts. Well, I'm not going to do that because I'm going to get banned from the podcast.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So, you know, if you want to buy this guy, Andrew P. Hammond's book, you'll find, because there are only about 2 or 3 actual genuine reviews from people who have been fooled into buying it. They all say, this is rubbish. This is just a pamphlet that looks like it's been written in bold type and says nothing useful whatsoever. And yet thousands and thousands of people are buying this book. Cryptocurrency 1x1, it's called, by Andrew P. Hammond.
Okay. I'll buy that.
And as I say, everyone who's reviewed it has also reviewed the original keto diet book, the XXL keto diet book, the complete air fryer handbook, and the wok book.
Lovely, sounds good. I'll look into that. Looks a good review. Good, it's good talk up there. Thanks very much. Glad I get into it. All right.
Besides, by the way, did you find on reverse image search? Did you find cats?
No, I didn't. It just says. First of all, it came up with hair design in New Milton, which is not that far away from where I am. I thought, really? So no, I don't think they couldn't find anything. She's probably real.
I think she's real. I mean, it's not one of those stock photos anyway. It looks like a real person to me.
We might as well just round off on Bitcoin, because we've been going around the houses here. But I can't help but think we've gone off track a bit.
Really?
So have you noticed, if you look at the chart there, it's basically almost touched the 200-day moving average. And it's failed a little bit. It's gone down. Who knows what happened? But it's dropped. It didn't quite get there. So the 200-day moving average right now is at 40,400, pretty much. and it got to, where did it go? 40,000, actually. It got 40,000, and those failed to come back down. So we'll see.
Well, when you say failed, it may get above one of those little, if you look on a 1 hour, an hourly chart, you'll see it looks a bit like a reverse head and shoulders. Mm. Like it might be just limbering up for a breakout upwards. If it gets upwards, I still won't be getting excited because, you know, there's that. I'm still waiting for that second shoulder of a possible head and shoulders to form. But, you know, nothing's set in stone. That head and shoulders may just morph into something completely different, as is often the case. You have to keep an open mind and just watch the charts day by day developing. And if it's not going according to what you expected, if it's not turning into the head and shoulders we've talked about, then I just have to very quickly accept that, change my mind and go, okay, so it's going to be something else. And watch it form into a triangle or whatever it happens to be instead. That's the important thing, is keep an open mind. Don't get wedded to one way of thinking, one way of looking at it.
No, you're right. Okay. Thanks, Glenn.
That's all right. That's all right.
Marvellous stuff. And we'll speak to you next week.
Yeah. Bye.
Yeah. Bye.
I just can't find a good way to say goodbye.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome back, everyone, to Vox Markets. My name is Paul Hill, and by popular demand, I am delighted today to be able to speak to Jamie Constable of N Plus One Singer, one of the sharpest minds in the city when it comes to anything economic and capital markets. So welcome, Jamie.
Thanks, Paul. Good to see you again.
Yeah, well, there's a lot been happening over the past 4 weeks since we spoke, and not least the delight of a lot of people, the opening up of pubs and restaurants and cinemas inside and stuff. But what sort of caught your eye in terms of the economic and capital markets?
Well, I think, you know, we spoke last time about expecting to see upgrades for growth in the UK. And it's a little bit old news now, but I think it's still worth mentioning. The Bank of England really shot the lights out with their upgrades. I don't think anyone expected them to go from 5% to 7.25% for the UK economy. And you mentioned consumer opening up. They're only assuming that the consumer spends 10% of those excess savings that they've formed. Now, when we spoke last time, we were talking about 150 billion of excess savings. They've rounded that up now to a cool 200 billion of excess savings. I mean, only spending 10%. I mean, some of the newspapers today, I think, are saying that people are going to save, but they're still saving 90% on those Bank of England forecasts. So it's looking pretty boom town in the for the UK economy at the moment.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's certainly when it comes to sort of like, you know, just as a poll of me and the locals around here, I mean, if you're not going to spend them on sort of experiences going down the pub and having nice meals indoors, not in the rain, which is a bit of a change because it's freezing here in Birmingham. But if you're not going to be doing that, you're going to be carrying on with your house. You're going to be buying new houses. You're going to be repair and maintenance. And I think we've already started seeing that in the earnings season, haven't we, with the sort of house builders. We've seen inflation, the brick builders. I mean, what your thoughts are there?
Well, I think upgrades is the scene, because you look at those GDP numbers and what we're seeing there, and that's going to have what's happening in the real economy, looking at what companies are saying. And if we just look over recent days, I mean, Dunelm, you might say they were a big beneficiary from the lockdown and have done well out of it, but they've come out with earnings, a statement today, substantially materially ahead of expectations again. So it's carrying on from the lockdown into the opening up. Look elsewhere, just in the general economy. Knights, Gately, the lawyers, they're extremely busy, as busy as they've ever been. Knights upgrades today. You just can reel off the upgrades. Going across the pond, I suppose, to the US, Ferguson upgrades. It's across the whole gamut now, really, of just companies, Future PLC. Yeah. Companies are upgrading. I suppose that does raise the question, though, because what we have seen a little in the market at the moment is a bit of travel and arrive, an old adage for the market there, but is it already in share prices that we're going to see these upgrades? So some shares are moving ahead just because the scale of the upgrades is so high. Others are kind of pausing for breath a little bit. And I think that's what we're seeing at the market. The market needs to breathe a little bit to work out how big the upgrades are going to be. But certainly for the UK exposed stocks, I don't see this as the only upgrade we're going to get. This is the start of the upgrade cycle, and there's more to come.
And what do you think about sterling? Because it's gone through a bit of a sort of a boom, really, over the last 6 months. It's gone from, I think, against Cable, it was about 120, sort of like, you know, middle of last year. And now that we've had a successful vaccination rollout, the economy is absolutely ripping. And it's now over 140, which is incredible, really, because how do you see that moving going forward? Because that will affect anybody with overseas earnings.
Yeah, well, it's again, I think we discussed it a little bit last time with sterling. It's paused for breath a bit, I think, again, there on sterling. It's gone up. I think you've now got a bit of a differential going on because if we talk about inflation. We've had the UK CPI numbers out this week, 1.5%, which was in line with expectations, doubled on the last reading. It's going to keep on going up. The base effect's going to move that. So moving up, the Bank of England is saying averaging 2.5% this year, which is top end of all the expectations, which is quite interesting. They're right up there. But if you look over the pond, I mean, the US, the last inflation reading there was 4.2% and then 3% ex-energy. So I think that's starting to, you know, it's a little bit harder for sterling to move ahead now against the dollar. The US dollar index is at a 6-year low, would you believe? So the dollar is really weak against all of this. So it's made the easy gains, I would say, now to 140. If you think back 5 years, the range was typically 140, 160, wasn't it? Pre-Brexit and feed the votes on Brexit. So we're now at the bottom of that range. If we assume that Brexit's all past us now and we're moving back to some kind of the old ranges, as it were, then maybe we're at the bottom of the range and maybe we can move back up towards that 160 level in time. But I think you need something more to change now to move that.
Yeah. And I guess probably for investors, if you want to sort of see where that one moves, it's looking at the real differential between the sort of the yields between both countries. If you've got effectively, even though the treasury is higher, is about 10-year treasury is about 1.7, I think, in the States, whereas in the UK, it's about 0.8. So you'd think just on a nominal basis that it was better to put your money in the States. But if you've got inflation of 4% in real terms, actually, the best place is in the UK. Now, what seems to be happening also is that there's been a bit of a mini M&A boom recently. I mean, you had this morning even, you had KKR bidding for John Lang, and you've had a whole bunch of different stuff. You've had Blackstone for some Modwin, and Proactis has also been. So what are your view on the sort of the M&A boom here?
Well, I think what it's telling us is that UK assets are cheap. Even though the currency's moved up. I mean, we had a lot of big... It's not just a mini boom now, I think, Paul. We had it last year as well. The whole load of companies, the ones you've mentioned, UDG, that's been taken out as well. Immunodiagnostics, that's been taken out as well. Yeah. There was a bid for SAN as well. I mean, it's been rejected at the current stage, but that doesn't mean they won't come back. UK assets are cheap, particularly to private equity funds who've got access to very cheap money. So it's going to continue. I think there is... People are realizing that UK assets are cheaper now. If you look at the Bank of America survey that they've done, UK asset allocators have put more money into the UK now. So it's becoming more attractive. The short that we had on from Brexit is gradually closing. The M&A is going to keep on going. I mean, UK assets look cheap. So in that case, people are going to keep buying them.
And what about this Indian variant, which seems to be sort of reared? Is that a potential risk, or is actually for the UK domestic economy, it's going to encourage staycations? Is that actually an opportunity? How should investors sort of factor that one in?
Well, I think it's very much, you know, it's right at the forefront of people's thoughts at the moment, because if you look into Asia at the moment, it's not just India now. Thailand's got rising cases as well.
Nepal.
And Singapore is semi-locked down again. So, and Taiwan's got a soft lockdown as well. So it's the case to it might roll out now. What it basically means is that vaccination is key, as we all know. And UK is right up there at the forefront in terms of rates of vaccination. So I think that is becoming really key to the global recovery. But as you say, because we're right at the forefront it means that the UK economy itself, so long as we don't get a big explosion of cases and that the vaccines work against the variants, which is the key point, the UK economy looks a safe haven. I mean, look at Australia, look at New Zealand. They've got their borders closed effectively at the moment and their economies are doing fine. And they have been doing for quite a while. The question is, will we be able to go on holiday? Well, we can at the moment. as long as it remains under control, we should be still able to, only to Portugal, of course, but there is that protection given by the rapid rate that we've rolled out the vaccines and the rate that we continue to do so. Mm. But it is a question for the global economy that obviously Asia has been the engine of growth for the global economy. If Asia does start to see a big reemergence of COVID, that will raise questions in terms of equity valuations and markets.
Yeah. Well, I guess, though, for the domestic economy, though, if you've got more Brits actually holidaying at home this year, it's got to be good for the UK sort of pub industry and leisure industry, that's for sure. So
certainly. Yeah. It certainly will be. I think we used the number last time, 62 billion spent on holidays in 2019. If that's not going to be spent abroad, it's going to be spent in the UK economy.
Yeah. And I'm guessing sort of like, even if there is a slight wobble, then central banks are going to come to the rescue again, aren't they? That's sort of what we've seen in this movie before. They're all in, and therefore there's no way they're going to sort of damage what they've already had to spend and to potentially jeopardize the whole economic recovery.
Totally agree with that. Yes, they will. I mean, we're in quite a weird position at the moment because on the one hand, you've got people worrying about growth and inflation. But on the other hand, we're worrying about the variants and the potential re-emergence of COVID. So the market's kind of caught in a bit of a pincer movement at the moment. And I think that's why the market is just going sideways a little bit at the moment while it tries to work out what's going to happen next.
Yeah. And where's the, given all that sort of in that context and the timescales, where's the best sort of like assets to put your money at the moment?
Well, it's still equities, isn't it? I think unless you're going to get a wholesale increase in the variant and whilst the variant still works against the vaccines still work against the variant. Sorry, got that the wrong way around. But while that's still working, you're not going to get a wholesale increase. You look at US, you look at UK, increasingly across Europe and other countries, vaccines are being rolled out. Yeah. So while that happens, it's still the growth and the comeback and the bounce back that's really going to worry markets more than anything else. And that's the bond yield argument. And that's equities versus bonds and bond yields moving up still towards 2%, as we talked about it before on the US. And 1% in the UK.
Yeah. Well, certainly in my portfolio, I've got no long duration bonds and very little cash. So I'm fully loaded, certainly on equities. But where in particular stocks, Jane? What would you see your preferred play? If we're going to have sort of like relatively hard, soft international borders, you've got Boris saying yesterday that any country on the amber list, people should be going on holiday. Might be essential travel, but certainly not on holiday. Mm. Then where's the best place to put your money in equities?
Well, I'm still basically talking the barbell portfolio approach with domestics at the front on one end, and then your secular growth areas of the economy and stocks exposed to that on the other end of it. I still think that's the place to be. Some of those domestics, as we just said, have paused a bit on their first upgrades because, let's be honest, markets are at good levels, but as I said earlier, this is the first of what I see as a number of upgrades coming through. So those share prices will move ahead again. So I'm not changing the view really on where we should have our money at the moment.
And what about pricing power? Is that important on equities? Because if you've got inflation sort of like, you know, moving up, particularly on the domestics, then do you need stocks with pricing power?
Totally, 100%. The first question you're asking at the moment is, does the company I'm looking to invest in have pricing power? Yeah. With inflation like we're seeing, if they can't pass it on, they're going to get squeezed. You've had one or two instances already of companies that have warned about not being able to pass on pricing. I mean, you mentioned the BRICS companies. Even Forterra said that this week that they passed on pricing to date, but they can still see quite huge price rises, input price rises coming through. And they're just they're upgrades, don't get me wrong, but they sounded a note of caution that can we keep pushing these price rises through? So pricing power, it's been a key for the market in a low inflation economy. Even in a low inflation economy, it's been key. But pricing power is everything at the moment.
And that brings us neatly on to a sort of like one particular sector, which is a secular grower and has got absolutely enormous amounts of pricing power, is sort of healthcare. Plus, obviously, it just had a sort of like transformational change over the last 18 months, and it's saved the world in terms of the scientists bringing vaccines to markets, improving sort of like COVID testing, the accuracy of those, and hopefully at some point in time we'll also get a therapeutic. What's your sort of view on sort of healthcare investing and whether it's a good area for people to start having a serious look at?
Well, healthcare is a big specialism for N1 Singer. It's a core competent in terms of us and stocks we cover, as you know, with some of our brokerships, things like that. I think it's an area that is going to, the pandemic has changed the whole picture, and you're going to see prolonged spending by governments and investment in the sector. I mean, testing, I mean, is one of the big things that's going to need to grow. If you look at the continent, and I frequent visits to Poland, for example, if you go to Germany, they've got a whole network of private testing labs, clinics. You can go in on a Saturday, you can get tested for anything that you want and get the results back. And I think importantly, if you go and get tested, at least in London where I am, it costs you the fortune if you want to get, you think, if you go and get tested privately. Over there, it's a reasonable price so people can get tested. And what we all know about healthcare is early diagnosis, absolutely key.
Yeah.
Diagnose early, you reduce the costs for the healthcare system across the whole world if you can do that. Mm. At the moment, we've got obviously a massive backlog in the UK. Just going back to the UK again.
4.7 million. and that's excluding all the people who haven't been able to be screened who should be on the list.
Yeah, so you've got this huge backlog. You're going to get investment across the healthcare world, whether it's scanning, whether it's testing. It's going to have to happen because everyone's woken up now to the potential challenges that we have for the world in terms of what in this case is a virus, but other diseases as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely spot on in terms of the actual testing, because at the moment, the government has got four framework contracts out for tender, lots 1 to 4, and they haven't yet made a firm decision on who their absolute key suppliers are. But if you add that all up, that comes to 20, they've reserved £22 billion of new testing spend over the next 2 years. So that's just coming down the pipe, and that just shows you. And also, we've got a whole bunch of different new technologies, gene editing, genome sequencing. We've got sort of like precision healthcare, we've got telemedicine, which now is we get the delivery of that of healthcare to the actual coal phase, and much cheaper and quicker as well. So there's been a revolution that will continue to be. Where particular stocks would you sort of like suggest people have a look at? Because you've obviously got, there's a whole host that people can sort of like see. And I know you mentioned sort of genomic sequencing.
Mm. Well, that's key, isn't it? Because obviously, you can have your PCR test or your flow test.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, what we're worried about at the moment are the variants.
Yes.
The only way you can find the variants is through the sequencing angle on it. So there, obviously, you've got the government labs, but other companies that are exposed to that are companies like Your Gene Source Bio.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you've got EKF. The picks and the shovels was an old adage that was used. If you think back to the tech boom of the 2000 period, picks and shovels were what people talked about.
EKF came up with a very positive trading update today, and I saw there was sort of like upgrades. I mean, it's amazing because the shares have done really well. But actually, when you look at the numbers, they're still trading on a pretty modest sort of EBITDA, sort of like multiple EBIT. I think it was about 13 or something. So there's still plenty of gas in that tank.
I think so, and they're provided one of the picks and shovels. But of course, EKF isn't just a COVID play. The upgrade today that came through from their core business returning to 2019 levels of activity. So you can see how quickly that testing is going to come back. Because, as you said, as you just very correctly said, you've got that massive backlog of people who need to find out what might be ailing them.
Mm. And I think certainly when you mentioned on the genomic testing and stuff, to effectively DNA analyze down to the actual degree of which types of variants is going to be crucial to be able to then tweak your vaccines. And what's also interesting for investors is that I think we're getting a sort of like a center, Silicon Valley of sort of diagnostic technology built into the UK, because not many people have really picked this one up, but the UK is the only country in the world almost doing 100% genomic testing of every positive test. And they then put that into a database, a bio database. And that's going to give a huge competitive lift to any test a diagnostics company having access to that in the UK. And I think you've seen that with likes of, you know, Avacta, Novacyt, Source Bio, Omega Diagnostics. All these guys are actually knocking the ball out in terms of accuracy of their lateral flow test. So I think what we're going to get is almost like a cluster, a bit like Silicon Valley in medical, you know, medical diagnostics. But I don't think it's just that as well, because you've got sort of like new technology like immunodiagnostics and stuff. So you've got sort of you've got Oncommune, and you've also got Verici as well coming to play over the next couple of years.
Yeah, I think you've got plenty of stocks here in this area. I mean, we talk about you wanted to be involved with secular growth in terms of that barbell I talked about earlier. And certainly healthcare would be one end of that, the other end from the domestic, so secular growth area for the UK economy, where UK has expertise, world leading expertise that has had for many years. And as you say, we've got genomic testing there. We might not have the public testing clinics and things out in the economy yet, but I'm sure they will come through in the future because people will demand them and companies will innovate and bring them into the market. But yes, I agree. Healthcare is definitely one of those areas where we should be looking.
Yeah, and that database, the government database, could give the UK, say, this head start, because if you overseas countries are effectively behind the curve in terms of keeping their vaccines up to date, no doubt about it. And I'm just hoping that we get a blockbuster therapeutic at some point in time, so anybody who has to, you know, rocks up into hospital requiring actual sort of help and stuff, you know, hospitalization. Okay, brilliant, Jamie. Well, thanks very much for your time.
And
next time, I'm hoping to pick your brains on all things technology and software related, as well as any more sort of bits and pieces you have, because that's another place where you've got sort of good pricing power. So many thanks for your time, and look forward in touching base again in a month's time.
Thanks, Paul. Good to speak to you again.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Vietnam Holding, up 3%, 240. At four, Synergen, down 6.3% to 123. Atomico Holdings, down 52% to 8.8. Can't believe people are actually promoting that before the court date. It's a 50-50, you know, binary decision, and not good, as I talked to Glenn about in the podcast. At two, Shield Therapeutics, down 3.2% to 57.5. And at one, Challenger Energy Group, down 3.8% to 0.305. Okay, it's time for the top five most read RNSs. They are as follows. At five, Cellular Goods. That's the interim results. At four, Avacta Group. Posting of annual report and notice of AGM. At three, Tiziana. Trial initiation in an SPMS patent with Forolamab. Forolamab. Oh, I don't know what that is. At two, Arca Blockchain joins newly formed Bitcoin Mining Council. And at one, Omega Holdings, scheme of arrangement, result of second court hearing. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.